The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey everybody, it's Chuck Arfine, and this is the White Sox Talk Podcast, brought to you as always by our friends at Wintrust. All right, today on the podcast, one of our favorite guests, Dan Plesac of MLB Network, who comes on the pod to talk about Luis Robert, Jose Abreu, Yoan Moncada, why he thinks the White Sox should make the playoffs, why this is a huge week for Major League Baseball and dealing with COVID. Talk about his nephew, Zach Plesac, who is coming into his own with the Indians. And also, Dan wants to come on the podcast again when the White Sox make the playoffs. And he wants to do it with Hawk Harrelson. Imagine Hawk and Plesac on the podcast together and the White Sox in the playoffs. We need all this to happen. But in the meantime, it's Dan Plesac himself, with me and Ryan McGuffey on the White Sox Talk Podcast. Let's do it.
White Sox, go, go, White Sox.
That ball hit deep, way back, deep to left field.
Holy cow, Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead.
Jimenez leaves the ballpark. You can't put it on the board. Yes.
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
All right, you see him on MLB Network. You see him on MLB Tonight. 18 years in the majors, our former colleague and an esteemed member of the Hawk Harrelson fan club. It is Dan Plesac.
Chuck, and I can say this, and I'm boasting about it, I am still a card-carrying member of the Hawk Harrelson fan club. I'm going to tell you, I've done some great things in my life, but I had a chance to call a couple of games, White Sox games, over a two-year period, and I did one in Yankee Stadium. And to this day, I was walking out of the booth. It was a game in Yankee Stadium, and he had a roll of silver dollars, and he took a silver dollar out of his pocket, and he told me, Daniel, human hands have never touched this coin. This will be your ball marker. And to this day, Chuck, that silver dollar is my ball mark that I mark my ball on the greens. To this day, I have had it for 4 years. Steal my clubs, steal my bag, steal my identity, but do not touch that Hawk Harrelson silver dollar.
What a story.
Can you give me a little, give us a little Hawk? Whatever you got.
Hell yes. Who owns the butt? Redner, what in the hell are you doing? I still don't care. You know, I flip on the games, and Jason Benetti does a fabulous job. Mm-hmm. But there's a part of me that still, I'm waiting for Hawk to, like, stick his head in there and go, you know, like, hey, strap it on, White Sox baseball. You can cancel the postgame show.
I feel like that's I'm missing that too, especially with Luis Robert, because I'm waiting for him to like make some kind of comp to Yaz that I just haven't heard yet. But he's the one.
You know the cool thing. You know the cool thing about this guy as a player. From a national perspective, we see a lot of players. You see a lot of guys, and it has to be cool if you're a White Sox fan right now that you're getting a chance to look at a player. We have this slogan at MLB Network. They say that's what they look like, right? He is. If you were like in a coma and woke up yesterday and you flipped on a White Sox game and you woke up and you watched this guy play, he doesn't look like he's a rookie. He looks the furthest thing from a guy that has less than 2 weeks in the big leagues. He's a combination of a lot of guys. When I watch him, he reminds me a little bit of Alex Burke. He reminds me of Bo Jackson. He can do so many things, and he looks angry in the batter's box. Like, he doesn't look intimidated. you know, you can get sometimes the players that come from Cuba, they're very raw. They play with a lot of emotion. They swing and miss. They want to make the action happen. This guy's a great mix of having that lot of life in his body, but there's a calmness to his game that's exciting. He's a guy that if when he walks into the batter's box, you sit down and you watch and you don't want to move because you expect something great to happen when he's in there. The Sox have done so many things right, but whatever they're doing in their international scouting, particularly in Latin America, whatever they're doing, continue to do it because they're hitting home runs left and right.
So when I ask you this question, look back at the prime of your career. I want to look, let's take Dan Plesac at his best. Who in this White Sox lineup would you not want to face the most? Is it Robert or is it someone else?
Game on the line, Abreu. I'm going to tell you why. He's a professional run batted in guy. He puts the ball in play. He can hit a good fastball. He can hit a good breaking ball. He'll hit the ball outside. He'll hit it to right field. I know you want to hear Eloy Jimenez. You want to hear Luis Robert. But to me, it's Abreu because he's a package of all of those guys. But he's an experienced version of those guys. And the White Sox hit a home run with him. He has been a constant in the middle part of that lineup. And you take for granted when you're a White Sox fan or a Yankees fan or whatever fan of your team you are that you have a good 4- and 5-hole hitter. White Sox fans got spoiled with Paul Konerko because he was a guy that you could put in the middle of the order and he hit. And he hit good pitching. And this guy, to me, is a guy that I wouldn't want to face because unless you throw 100 with a nasty breaking ball, there are very few guys that have that combination, that bolt. Abreu, to me, is a tough guy to get out. He's a smart hitter. He's a professional hitter. He puts the ball in play.
I mean, Dan, the White Sox offense, small sample size. We keep saying that in the 60-game season. We're 9 games in. They rank number 1 in the majors in batting average. They're number 2 in the AL in about every possible other category. They're getting Nomar Mazara back as we tape this podcast. Looking at that lineup, 1 through 9 is probably the most complete lineup that I can remember since the 94 White Sox. When you're talking about Nomar Mazara hitting 8th, and Nick Madrigal with his capability of kind of turning the lineup over again, hitting 9th. I don't think nationally they're going to get the love yet because they're so young and so new. But if you have to stack up this lineup against, say, the Yankees and other teams in the American League or even the National League, where do you think this lineup stacks up when it's all said and done?
They're without question in the top 5. I love the Minnesota Twins lineup. I think that lineup can score some runs. They have run producers. Adding Josh Donaldson helps them. They're more experienced. They're a lineup that you could look at and say, oh, yeah, I know who Nelson Cruz is. I know the parts that fit that. One of the guys, too, he's been lost in all of this. Moncada's turned himself into a good player. Now, we want to talk about Robert. We want to talk about Jimenez because they're young and they're vibrant and they're the now kind of guys. But last year, I thought was the key. Where the White Sox are going, and we marvel at their top young position players. Moncada's right, the guy in the middle of it. They needed him to be the player. For a couple of years there, a lot of the industry was getting a little bit concerned. Was he overhyped? Was he the player that people thought he was? You know, power, he could hit, he could run, he could do a lot of things, switch hitter, could do a lot of things. And you would see it in spurts, but you didn't see it a lot over periods of time. So you put Moncada in there with the other two young players, along with Abreu. You have Yasmani Grandal. You're getting Mazara back in that lineup, right? Nick Madrigal has a 4-hit day against the Royals. So the lineup gets turned over. They're definitely a top 5 lineup. I would put the Twins lineup to me as a top lineup. The Yankees lineup is a top lineup. The Dodgers lineup is a top lineup. And I think when Trout's playing and he's healthy, that Angels lineup can hit too. But the White Sox don't take a back seat. The only back seat that they take, they just don't have the household names as Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, you know, Cody Bellinger, Justin Turner. They don't have the household names yet, but I think, listen, people that really follow the game of baseball, they know how good this White Sox lineup is. The only thing I guess that was disappointing to me at the start of this season was I was really excited to see what kind of impact Michael Kopech was going to have in the starting rotation. I thought 60-game schedule, you're always worried about how are you going to incorporate innings with young pitchers, particularly guys coming off of Tommy John. Do you start them, but then after they've accumulated some starts, do you back them off to get through 162 games? If you want them at the beginning, you want to make sure you have them at the end. I felt like, wow, this was almost perfect timing for a guy like Kopech, because you could bring him in and hopefully you could run his turnout there every 5 days. And that was disappointing. And I think they're going to miss that long term. I've been very impressed with Dallas Keuchel. He's been what they brought him in here to be. He's not going to strike a lot of people out. You guys have seen when he's on and he gets in trouble, he can snap his fingers and get a ground ball double play. So the infield play is going to be key. He's done what they brought him in to do. If their young pitching and Giolito continues to get better, if their young pitching holds up their end of the bargain, I can't see how there are 15 teams. 16 teams are getting in, right? 16 of the 30 are getting into the 60-game schedule. I don't think there's 15 better teams right now than the Chicago White Sox. If they continue to play like they're playing now, they're going to be in the mix. I like the Twins. I think the Twins are a well-polished, oiled machine. They're good. But the White Sox, to me, they're a playoff team.
I agree with you on that. If they don't make the playoffs, something has horribly gone wrong in many areas, because you don't even need to be a 500 team probably to get into the playoffs, right?
You don't have to, but you know, there's going to be a lot of teams. You know, if you look at last year, Chuck, there were the superpowers, and then there were teams that were pretenders, and there were a lot of teams. There were four or five superpower teams. The scary thing for like the Yankees, the Dodgers, the teams that are built to win right now that have a lot of depth is, in 60 games, a lot of things can happen. So I don't think they have as much of an advantage, but now the Yankees are off to a great start. The NL West teams are playing very well. The White Sox are right in the middle of this. I just hope that their young starting pitchers can at least get through some innings. It's hard to continue go through the bullpen when the bullpen has to be involved in three or four innings every day. If the starting pitching, don't panic after 2 weeks. Once each guy gets 2-3 turns through the rotation, you have to cut everybody a break. And I know it's hard to do as a fan. These guys had the plug pulled on the season in the middle of March, right? They were just getting ready and then go home. Guess what? When you're a Major League Baseball player, your next-door neighbor, if you're a pitcher, can grab a glove and go out and play catch. He can play catch with you, but you can't get any swings in. And if you're a position player, you couldn't go to a community college. You couldn't go to where you worked out because with social distancing, you couldn't be in a crowd of people. What do most guys do in the winter? They go work out with college teams. So what happens? You're out in the field. You're with a bunch of guys. You're hitting. You're throwing. All of a sudden, that came to a close in March. It's amazing to me the shape that players are in now, because I flip on a game, and I watch games every day. And after, like, the first couple of days, I'm flipping on. And I don't see any difference. You couldn't tell me that they missed 3 months when you flip on a game. A credit to the players.
That was my point. Like, you cannot tell. I'm amazed when you watch all these games. I thought guys are going to show up overweight. I mean, every team would have some guys that you're like, oh, this guy didn't show up ready to play. Everybody throughout the game looks to be in shape, and that's a credit to those players, Guff.
You know, the industry is different now, Chuck. The industry is different that when players come to spring training, there's no time off for these guys. Like, it used to be when I broke in 1986, guys would come in. I came in with a really gruff Milwaukee Brewers guys, right? Pete Vukovich, Gorman Thomas, Raleigh Fingers. They would come into camp. If you weighed 220, you came in at 235. You wore a plastic top. You sweated it out. You ran laps. And by the end of spring training, you were ready to go. Guys report to spring training now in Glendale if you're a White Sox player. And the first thing they do is they get you on a scale. They take your body fat. And they're like, you know, what the heck did you do all winter? You're a 5 foot. I mean, guys, games are on TV. These guys today are in far superior shape than they've ever been. And a credit to the guys. And another thing to give the players a lot of credit, they're getting tested all the time. You're hearing no complaining. You're hearing no griping. They're basically sequestered into a hotel or to and from the ballpark. They're working out in shifts. They're making a lot of adjustments to make this thing go. And I don't think at times we give the players enough credit for going through what they're doing to continue to play.
Yeah, I know for sure that we want to ask you about that. But I want, before we get off track about starting pitching, you know, Dylan Cease to me is kind of the key cog in this whole thing, because I think Giolito has figured it out and is going to be more of the guy we saw the second time around. Dallas Keuchel, you've already mentioned, is that guy you know what you're getting from. But Dylan Cease is the guy that has to take that next step. His fastball command is extremely important, as we saw against the Royals on Sunday. What about Dylan Cease do you like that will allow him to be that guy that can take that next step?
First thing you have is stuff, and he has the stuff. What's frustrating, the most frustrating thing for a fan is to watch a player, and it's with pitching. You because the expectation, here's a guy that you draft high in the draft, he came highly recommended, another guy in that long list of college players that was a terrific player. You're thinking SEC, this guy's going to be it. You're going to flip the switch. He's going to be our version of Aaron Nola, right? He's going to just take the big league baseball. And a lot of times it's so frustrating as a fan because you'll see one good inning and you'll see the next inning, four hits, four runs, can't get out of it, and you got to take him out and start. I watched this first start. Command is good for like two or three hitters, and you're thinking, okay, this is the day that he has it. Gives up a two-out base hit, then a walk, then a stolen base, then another base hit. And all of a sudden, the key to being a good pitcher early on, minimizing the damage. And I think one of the keys to all pitchers that eventually stick, making adjustments on the fly. And I was guilty of it too in my career. I would come off an inning, I would sit down, and so much happened that I couldn't even remember sequence pitch to pitch what happened. Then I give up a walk, a double, then it was a walk and an error. You're going a million miles an hour and you can't slow it down. The key to being successful at the big league level as a pitcher is when the wheels fall off, fixing it in that at bat. It's like a golfer. You hit one into the woods, your game, you start reeling. You're thinking about that shot in the woods, and the next thing you know, it's a double bogey, it's another bogey. The athletes that can do it the most on that mound, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavin, John Smoltz, Roger Clemens, Pedro Martinez, Curt Schilling, their stuff was great, but they made an adjustment in an at-bat to conquer and fix what was wrong instead of four hitters later giving up one run as opposed to giving up four runs and taking yourself out of the game. I love his stuff. You can see that he's a very competitive guy. He's learning on the fly, and the most difficult thing with pitchers, particularly young guys, that you want to pitch well, you have to have some patience, and it's not an easy thing to have.
And the problem we saw with Ronaldo Lopez before he got hurt is exactly what you were saying, letting everything snowball on him. His stuff is really good, but he lets one pitch, one at bat, one inning affect him, and he's done basically. And he worked on it in the offseason, but it's one thing he gets to work on it, but you need the experience on the mound and to know how to do it. And we're all expecting these guys to be amazing right off the jump, and it doesn't work out that way, does it?
You know Chuck, to me, when I watch Lopez pitch, unfortunately, I guess for a White Sox fan, all the games that I've ever seen him pitch, like I'm home on a ship from MLB Network and he's pitching, he pitches great. And I wonder, how in the world does this guy get beat? Yeah, every time I seem to watch, he pitches well. And I know what White Sox fan think, that they're the only team that has those guys. The Phillies have a guy in Vince Velasquez. They have a guy in Zach Eflin. Every team has those guys. But when it's your team and your favorite team, you sit there and you pull your hair out because you see at times what could be. And you always sit and think, like, why does everybody else – why did they always have those guys and we don't have them? Guess what? They have them too. But you don't care about those guys. You care about the White Sox.
All right, more of our conversation with Dan Plesac of MLB Network in a moment.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road.
With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, I know we've all been frustrated with the Marlins situation and with the Cardinals situation, especially if it did, if guys went out and they strayed from the plan, if guys went to casinos, whatever it might be. MLB put the new protocol in place today that they're saying no one's leaving the hotel anymore. It's hard for people that haven't put on a uniform to actually understand and comprehend what that means. They're only traveling to 10 cities, and you know, people are having a hard time wearing masks across the country, let alone being told you're going to go to a city for 4 days and all you can do is go to the ballpark and go to your hotel. How hard is it to complete what MLB is trying to do with the 60 game season? And if you were a player, how much credit are you giving the guys in order to actually see this through? Because the White Sox certainly seem to be a team that have talked about it again and again and again. They have meetings before every series saying, hey, remember, not today, don't slip up. Because if one goes, we all go.
That is a fabulous question. And I'm going to give you a two-part answer. First part is, you have a lot of young guys that are in their 20s, early to mid-20s, early 30s. Baseball, guys aren't playing in their 40s like I did at 41 years old. So what do you have? You have a lot of young guys that have money, right? That comes with the territory. You're staying in the nicest hotels all around the league. You want to go. You want to go to a nice restaurant. You want to go to a club. If you're a single guy, you want to enjoy the life of being a big league ball player. I enjoyed playing golf on the road. I would be going nuts right now because you basically come back, unless you're really into video games and ordering room service, you're kind of cooped up. You go to the ballpark in shifts. Think about it. It's like you're playing American Legion ball, but you're playing it in Milwaukee and in Arlington and in Anaheim and in Arizona. So you don't have the normal access to the locker room. You're dressing in shifts. You know, I mean, the whole thing is, think about this. When I would go to the ballpark, and if you walk into the training room, you have all these tubs. You want to go sit. You want to have your legs or your back, whatever. You go in that tub. All of a sudden, now they got to drain the club tub. They got to sanitize the club, that thing. They got to put new water in it. Their whole day is disrupted. The second part of it is, it's hard for young people to understand that I'm not worried about myself, but I worry about the guy whose locker is next to me, to my left and to my right. Is he taking care of himself so he doesn't infect me? And whatever happened with the Marlins and the Cardinals, there's a lot of rumors that are flying around. What happened? Did they break the code? Did they go out? Maybe they did. But I do know this from people that I have talked to the last 24 hours. If baseball wants to continue, they're going to have to do this and do it the right way. And I really think that 99% of the guys get it now, right? There is always going to be on every team one guy that feels like, you know what? I can't do this. I'm going to sneak out the back door. But there's a different protocol. There's going to be security now in the hotels, by the exits, making sure guys aren't coming, guys aren't going. But you have to do that because you're dealing with guys that are in their 20s. And let's face it, from what we've seen, this COVID, this new wave of COVID, it's really something. If you're health compromised, it's been horrible for the elderly and the people that have been sick. But if you're a 25-year-old baseball player, that you're bulletproof to begin with anyway, you're a picture of perfect health, you're thinking, this can't happen to me. That it's something that happens to somebody that's older. And I think what happened with the Marlins, what happened with the Cardinals, was a huge scare and a huge wake-up to the teams that maybe were on the fence and guys were thinking, hey, I might try to, you know, go a little bit away from the plan. I think that stopped it. And the guys that are playing now want to be playing. And I really believe if we can get through this week, if we can get through week two, we're going to make this thing all the way through. I really believe it.
Now, why do you say that? Why this week?
I think because the scare of what has happened with the Marlins, what has happened with the Cardinals, baseball has figured out, okay, if we don't have any more slip-ups, we don't have to worry. Let's think about this now. The Marlins, the Cardinals, the Brewers, they're going to have some doubleheaders coming up. If they're going to try to make these games up, this can't continue where teams are missing 3 or 4 days. Think about this. The Philadelphia Phillies, Jake Arrieta and some of their relievers haven't even pitched in a game yet. They've only played three games, so their four and five starters haven't even thrown an inning in a game. And now the Yankees are going to play the Phillies, so it's an unfair advantage for the Phillies. If baseball can get through this week, and I think that the teams that have had some slip-ups or a rash of positive COVID tests, if they can contain that, and in the next 3 or 4 days, things with St. Louis and with Miami, the tests come back negative, and those teams had a scare, I think you'll see those teams button things up, and I think we'll make it through the rest of the way.
You mentioned being frustrated with the pitching staff, and you and I were texting last week when your nephew was out there just dominating the White Sox for 8 innings and 11 strikeouts, and which I loved because, as we talked about.
I don't love it. I don't love it.
I loved it because I knew the result is a White Sox win. That's why it was ideal. It was everyone's happy in Northwest Indiana, and the White Sox get the win. But my point to you, Dan, we were texting about this. Why does it seem like the Indians, 1 through 5, regardless of name, you could trade CeCe Sabathia and Cliff Lee and have another CeCe Sabathia and Cliff Lee. You could trade Corey Kluber, and now you have Shane Bieber and Zach Plesac and all of the other guys in this rotation, regardless of where they were drafted or how they were acquired. The Indians just seem to be a team that when a guy gets on the mound, he's locked in and he throws strikes. What is the it factor that there are certain teams like the Indians and the Dodgers that just know how to develop talent like that?
No team in baseball, and I'm including the Yankees, I'm including the Dodgers, I'm including all the major market teams. Nobody in baseball drafts and develops and is more patient with their young pitchers than the Cleveland Indians. My nephew, Zach, prime example. The Cleveland Indians took a flyer on my nephew in the 12th round with his arm in a sling. His junior year at Ball State University, he had Tommy John surgery. Before that, his future looked bright. There were some that thought he was going to be not a first or second round pick, but more than likely somewhere round 3 to round 5. He was going to go fairly high in the draft. They took a chance on him. And what they do is they're very patient and they don't rush their pitchers. They would rather send a guy to A-ball for an extra year to get his confidence up. They're not so concerned about making a jump from A-ball to AA, and they're not giving in to the pressures of Baseball America and MLB.com, like the top 10 pitching prospects. We want to, you know, accelerate the progress. One thing I learned from my nephew, he had called me several times after having Tommy John, very frustrated. Thought the Indians were holding him back. He thought he should have been in Double A, and he was going back to A ball. They gave him a little taste of Double A in 2018. They brought him back there in 2019. I had dinner with my nephew in the middle of spring training last year, totally frustrated. He was frustrated that he wasn't starting the year in AAA. I said, Zach, you're learning. Your arm's not 100% yet. They're doing the right thing for you. Double A right now is this close to the big leagues. And that's like, it's not like it was 10 years ago. Guff, 3 weeks later, he gets a call. He starts the year in Double A, makes 2 starts in Triple A. He's in the big leagues in May. The rest is history. But I'll tell you, I had a chance to ask him this, why. They have great instruction. They don't rush their pitchers. They take care of their arms. And they have a wonderful facility that all of their minor leaguers, they're really big into prehabbing. So guys are on good programs with their elbow and their shoulder before they get hurt. You see this a lot. Tommy John, just because they take a ligament out of your knee or your leg and they put it in your elbow, not all guys come back. We just hear the good stories. But what the Indians try to do is to get their pitchers on a program so they don't get injured. And they're doing it, quite frankly, better than anybody else right now.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you one thing. His slider was magnificent against the White Sox. That came out of, I don't want to say out of nowhere, but he wasn't throwing sliders like that last year. What do you know about his advancement and how he became this Zach Plesac opposed to last year, which was still a really good pitcher?
You know, Chuck, he struggled with his secondary pitches, and he always has. He's always been a good fastball changeup guy. And I think one of the reasons why the slider has taken a little bit while to develop, he kind of gets caught. He has a curveball and a slider. And sometimes when you have both of those, it's hard to have a good one of each. So what you end up having is you have a slur because it's hard to have a good true curveball, a 12-6 curveball. And it's also hard, that same pitcher, to have a good hard slider. So what you end up usually getting is somewhere in between, and one of them is either on or one of them is either off. And then there's a picture, you know, the slider, the curveball is thrown more with your hand on top of the ball, right? The slider is more off to the side. Mm-hmm. What happens, you get kind of caught in between. And then you have guys that have the quick fix that have the cutter. The cutter is the pitch that, okay, you can pick that up and you'll throw that. Everybody can throw a cutter. I think finally he's figured out how to throw the curveball to stay on top of the ball and the slider off to the side, and he's becoming really confident. And it comes with experience, Chuck. The only thing that I think Zach needs to work on, he's like me. When it's Monday, he's already on Wednesday. He wants it so fast. He's very impatient, and he's starting to learn about his body, and he's starting to learn about pitching. What he needs to do is forget about that ray gun. What a lot of young pitchers do, they throw a pitch. A young pitcher today equates 96 miles an hour for six innings, giving up four runs. That's better than throwing 91 miles an hour, giving up one run. They're equating velo and spin rate to having a good pitching performance. So when he's starting to put it together, he's got to start. He's pitching tonight against the Cincinnati Reds. I hope he can do this. He's better when he pitches and doesn't throw. When he throws, he's 94, 95, and he's all over the place. When he pitches, he's 92, 93, and he moves it in and out, and he uses all of his pitches.
Well, I hope he has a great season, not against the White Sox. And I hope he just...
Chuck, this last start was the greatest thing for Northwest Indiana. All my brothers, myself, my family, we're all White Sox fans, right? So we want him to pitch well, and he did. And then the White Sox score a bunch of runs, and they win it 4-0. Zach goes scoreless, the good guys win. Everybody in Chicago and Northwest Indiana was happy.
Yeah, because Zach was a White Sox fan growing up, right?
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you a story. I signed as a free agent with the Cubs in the winter of 1992. And my family despised anything to do with the Cubs. So I came up with this idea at Christmas that I bought hats for my uncles and everybody. And to this day, this is a fact. So I bought like 12 Cub hats. And we were going to take a family photo of everybody around the Christmas tree. Only me put the Cub hat on. My brothers, my uncles, and my cousins, they held the hat. They refused to put a Cub hat on. That's how much the White Sox blood runs in the Plesac household.
I love it. I love it. I love Zach posted a picture, I think, last week that you might have reposted, Dan, of you guys all. I think they were visiting you when you were playing for the Phillies in 03 or something like that. And it was really cool that he posted a picture of, like, him with you guys. And he's probably, like, I don't know, 12 years old. It was pretty cool.
2003. It was the last time I was in Wrigley Field. That was my last year playing. I have a great story. So Zach and his twin brother, Ron, when I was pitching for the Diamondbacks, my brother, their father came out. And they planned a trip to come out to Arizona. And after a game was over, we get in the elevator. I didn't think anything of it. So it was my nephews, Ron and Zach, and Zach's dad, my brother, Ron. We get in the elevator. We're going down, and Randy Johnson's in the elevator. And I remember the boys looking up, because Randy Johnson was 6'11", right? And I remember when we walked out of the elevator, Zach saying to me, "That's the tallest human being. Who is that?" I said, "That's Randy Johnson." And he said, "Oh, that's the big unit." And to this day, when I see him on the mound, I'm a nervous wreck. When he made his debut last year in Fenway, I'm a nervous wreck because I know what it's like to warm up on that mound when people are standing there hooting on you. And I was a nervous wreck the other night because I know that he knows that all of his friends, all of his family, they're watching the game because it's against the White Sox. And I know what it was like for me. As much as I enjoyed coming to Old Comiskey, I enjoyed going to the New Comiskey and the Guaranteed Rate, I didn't like it because I just felt like it was nice to be away in Milwaukee or Toronto or Arizona and to come back as a visitor. I'd like to come back for the 3 days, but it didn't break my heart if I didn't pitch because it's almost like all the eyeballs are on you. Like, they're expecting so much because your fam and your friends, they saw you in high school at Little League. Nobody ever, you know, if you're a pitcher, you never got hit in high school, so everybody's remembrance of what you were as a player is good. So now they might go up four runs, so it's quite an adjustment.
Well, let's hope the White Sox make the playoffs. And when that happens, we'll have you back on the podcast, and we'll talk about their playoff situation. Because I'm dreaming of that.
We might have to get Plesac and Hawk together to do a playoff preview podcast.
How about let's change it up? How about when the White Sox get to the playoffs, we come back on and you bring Hawk and we all, the four of us together, we have a knockout podcast. Let's do it.
Done.
Booked.
Done. And just so everyone knows, if that is the case, I mean, I don't think Guff and I need to be on the podcast because
no, we just
Lizak, you and Hawk will talk the whole time.
Oh no. You're right. You're exactly right.
We'll just traffic cops.
Yeah, we'll be traffic cops. We'll let you guys talk.
Perfect.
Okay, awesome. That's a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast brought to you by Wintrust, your home for White Sox check-in with free ATMs nationwide. Go to the special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/Sox. And Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, Art Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast is over.
Hey, NBC has got something really special for you. Introducing their brand new streaming service, Peacock TV. They've got live sports, news, documentaries, and a whole bunch of your favorite TV shows. NBC Universal's new streaming service, Peacock, has it all. I've gone on it several times. I've watched basically every Saturday Night Live skit I've ever wanted to watch. They're all there on Peacock TV. Learn more at peacocktv.com. It's the exclusive home for all of NBC Sports' free Premier League coverage in deep with Ryan Lochte. There's also Lost Speedways, hosted by Dale Earnhardt Jr., and so much more. That's peacocktv.com to learn more.